about a trip over to London to meet my aunt. Called photos. Boys to help prepare for the life ahead. Age looks about eight, twice. A hand holding her mother, my grandmother. Lost in love with each other. Now you're in your 70s, my aunt. Widows. Your children long have their own homes and families. Their photos on the wall, you together with them in the pictures. I come to visit for a long weekend. We go to the Natural History Museum, discuss compost bins and purer water. She doesn't throw cooked food away. Makes sure there is no food like that not eaten. When we arrive home, have a slice of cake and a cup of tea, I am told. Be happy, love children. Prepare lunch. Don't want me to help make the dinner. Tell me to bring a full bottle of water for my journey back on the boat and bus.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Benflundy. And next we have Ray Taylor.
I'm once again sitting, walking, staring through this cold, this city. The people remain there conjuring that image, that emptiness. My pen has been lost over the years to another, to that thing calling me off and waiting. Have you seen me? Have you smiled today? Have you come to meet me and carry me off to your comfort, please? Inside you, do you have that thing, the thing I need to be with me to ensure that I'm safe walking along these places? Significance remains. I hear his words call me. The space around his voice are covering up this feeling, talking back to me to that thing, that place. I read of empty shoes, lost teeth, and destruction of people being people dying for me and my apparent freedoms, for my life, for my world. I would so desperately long to be convinced of the things I feel of that belief of the honorary. Lost, I cower into life, insane and looking for rigid science and a logical way out, but forget that we are not yet ready to be God. Our creation, the ideal, and the comprehensive understanding of an extreme. I would like to enable myself to engross life into me. I am not lost, despite my feverish protest to the contrary. I look into him, to her. I am in a surreal existence that flits back and forward through an existential and unsure reality. I don't have time to have beliefs, to obtain and work on morals or ethics. Trying just to be is difficult enough a task. Difficult enough for life. I would greatly hope that I do not fall off into her easy bed. Recently in search, I have found that she has come back. Her voice has sailed off across spring and found itself back to my eyes, that clarity, that voice, comfortable in being an artist and interpreter. I keep forgetting to record my thoughts, either orally or in paper. I'm saturated in sameness, an ingrained, inbuilt hardness that just differentiates between the real and these people. I'm going to start from that point, of emptiness and chaos, understanding this universe, understanding a pious world beyond this feeling, this space. I like the watch of these around me. Like many, I like their feet, their souls, the way their mouth is poised in silence and thought and activity. I'm often in thought about my father, his eyes, his voice, which I used to adore, its deep difference. I'm wondering why I was so cutthroat, so aggressive, so anti-him. As a father, I am doomed to questions. Thoughts, to long nights with solo and lonesome pints, slightly off cold and never tasting as they did in Krakow's arms, those loving free jazz arms of energetic Krakow, deeply energetic in post-Soviet, freely travelling into chaos, the freedom I feel, this light sound of jazz. I imagine Kerouac, Morrison, all my other idols and heroes travelling through the noise, the freedom, that whisk-pop of crackling jazz drum, and the soft eastern sound of Beethoven's Kreutzer, or perhaps a Hungarian folk dance, a gypsy French two fingers to the guitar. There is the deep impact of gratefulness, of freedom, of smiles to the woman whose thighs, golden smooth, longing you could hope to explore. I'm walking, like Kerouac, that voice in many people. And he understands you're offering with his gun. My favourite Dylan line, despite it being, he understands that you are offering with his gun. I have once again an arrogant boyhood misinterpreted, and can't write more than a notebook page without the onset of cramps, despite being able to 10-minute wank every morning, night, to wake, to sleep, a self-absorbed, blinding indulgence. I'm definitely in search of sanctuary, companion, an ancient muse to take me away out and off to some sky, to a faraway eye there. and I do miss her voice, her wanting, being alone for me, to want and need her tightly. I'm looking at your mouth. Imagine it speaking my words back to me in an ancient foreign voice. I like your feet, slightly pointed, a toe ring perhaps, sandals definitely, leading off to olden, aged, lived-in hands. I like the age of her face, her hands, her life is a wonderful way of showing itself to me through those lines and wrinkles. Her lips cannot lie, can't hide, and do call to me through night, through day. I'm wondering if she would take me to have time to shape me to poetry. There is simplicity in her shape and her back, and the sharp espresso smell of her hair. It's a sweet jazz in those eyes, Mary, your nymph mermaid autumn hair. I long to kiss and taste you. What is behind your eyes? What is in your beautiful soul, your feet? This bar is beautifully empty, beautifully watched by me. Who, if you can imagine, is sitting in the centre, watching out? The barmaid delicately forgiving. The couple chatting nervously with first date eagerness. A deathly rock band, awful, tries to entice me upstairs, no chance. And there is left in a bit of mouth. In Spanish or French delicacy, fashionista, and Neil Young above me, acoustically expressing newness to me. Change the lock and across the door, sail with me. I hear somehow then Neil pleading, sail with me somehow. And I'm walking again with Kara and wonder whether they will fall to me, these women, these mothers, and I could drink all night.
Thank you very much, Ray. And next we have Colin Scully, who's just done his workshop with Dave, so should I take the microphone away or should I do this?
Take the audience away, I think. Yeah, I was just going to say I did a workshop with Dave earlier, so, but don't expect anything like that from me. But I said, having done the workshop, I had to read a poem. This is actually a poem about encyclopedias. So I love reading encyclopedias, and encyclopedias was I won in a competition about 25 years ago, and I still go through it and browse through it at times, and I just like to browse through the obituaries of these mostly men, these very obscure people, and especially the Encyclopedia Britannica, and people who are famous for very obscure reasons. And this is for them. Called Duke of Mirandola, Pico della Mirandola, George Edward Pickett, Pickett de Rochemont. Their names fall out at me from the encyclopedia, with life's works listed and profiles captured. Italian scholar, Confederate officer, diplomat and statesman. They seem subdued in the pages of well-bound books. They hang together in dried out prose with picric acid and picric weed. They never could have dreamt that time would find them comrades here. The yellowing pages are strewn with men, warriors, heroes, dignitaries, and every now and then a woman gains a brief space, an adjunct to history. Mary Pickford pets her cat. The sunlit sepia photograph is less austere than her male counterparts. They know, perhaps, it's all a farce. Read me, they cry, I'm someone! Where next will Annie flip the page on these men's glorious deeds? The leather-bound Britannica is like a cage, its soft red binding and golden tissue, a jailer's seal. But now the game's up. Their trouble with posterity is over. I Google them one by one, then browse through Wikipedia. There's only hits from Mary Pickford this time. The same soft smile. A shimmering garden scene with trellis roses. And a much extended biograph.
Thanks very much, Paul. Next we have Seamus Harrington.
Thanks, Sue, and thanks to you, the workshop earlier on. That was some show. Take some effort to quieten the buskers.
A better man.
There was being egg on at the start of Fair City. I don't know what it was about, but it was called Does my bum look big in this? Sorry, this is, that's the name of this. Does my bum look big in this? Of course I've tried it on, yet feel there's something gone amiss. In your estimation, does my bum look big in this? Oh please, don't point that phone. I know you've often heard me hiss, but as I walk away, does my bum look big in this? Whenever I'm in doubt, I go along and ask my sis. I need to know for sure, does my bum look big in this? The bride and groom are out. No, stay. Let's give this waltz a miss. Embrace their point of view. Does my bum look big in this? We had some more champagne. Disregard the style of this, but still the niggling size. Does my bum look big in this? The father of the bride, who's never known to be remiss, staring straight across. Does my bum look big in this? I could mend the waist, if by chance you've got a Swiss army knife to try. Does my bum look big in this? The best man grabs the mic, as carefree couples kiss. But I need to figure out, does my bum look big in this? Another bottoms up. I must unzip an inch of bliss, astride the highest dune. Does my bum look big in this? Why does that mirror lie and decline to reminisce as I assess the floor? Does my bum look big in this? I hate to bother you. One premise that I can't dismiss. Now let us just recap. Does my bum look big in this?
You'll answer that question in private. next, we are KCG. Thank you.
Straying outside Ross Castle in Killarney, my eyes trace the passion of two salty twin forms. As the rays of a worldly wise sun stammer through its lushes above the holy eye of Loch Lean, respectfully I lingered before the remains of gracious waters, sensing their older, purer atmosphere. Straying soulfully through hushing leaves, hanging on the branches of sympathetic trees, and dreamed a little, for in such places where life and death are felt, no evening sunset seems too short or touched by immortality. Thank you.
Thank you, Daphne. And next we could have Graham.
Okay, this is a poem I wrote, the only poem I've ever written on commission, really. Pat Cotter was playing with the idea of poets writing about artwork in the Crawford, which seemed to me a really cool idea. So I sort of ran off to the Crawford one Saturday and sort of wrote a poem. I think he's forgotten the idea, so I'm left with this poem, and I kind of like it, although I'm not sure it works. It's called Two Women and One Girl at the Crawford Municipal Art Gallery, Cork. And the paintings, well, one, the first thing is about Seamus Murphy head of a female. The second is John Lavery's painting The Widow, which I think is amazing. And the third one is Edith Somerville's The Goose Girl. And the point about the goose girl at the end is that the goose is looking at the pot which it's going to be cooked in, and the girl is looking forward. So. She looks like my father's mother, her hair neatly parted in the middle, her daydream no doubt devotional, head turned to the idea of God, her hands held in the attitude of prayer, though the left gently touches her cheek, so that perhaps it is her husband or her secret love that swells her eyelids and runs with a sweet kiss curve of her lips. She sleeps in stone, dreaming of him, united in her desire and hope, flanked by the street-level poster blonde caught by the gallery window, who says, time for a total revolution in image. Above the active and passive heads, giant cranes are searching for tomorrow. She looks out of the blackness, the dark night of her mourning, a red lipstick marking her youth, the sexual devastation of her loss. The beauty of her face is the thing, the statement, symbol, the rebuke to a world that still allows warfare to burn love into the ashes of her sorrow. She is untouched by time, radiant, and stepping backwards into the abyss. She looks beyond the goose on her lap, far beyond the rural corner of her world, her innocent eyes, black as her hair, fixed on the lifetime's hardships to come. She looks down her allotted stretch of time, her red lips mouthing the words she will speak in self-defense, in desperation, in the heated moment of the one passion she will know. The goose looks away from its future. She, with eyes on the verge of song, braids hers.
Thank you very much for Frank Ward Challenge runner off Patrick
Cannon. Thank you. Yeah, most of my poems were my life. And, this one is from Robin. Will be all over, but it's not quite as timid as he appears to be. For the final warning. There's a robin perching high. He's always there when I pass by. With chest puffed out, warbling away, he seems a happy bird today. Alas, alas, don't be fooled. He's sending over a warning to that good tit that stole that fish of bread from him this morning. Listen, tit, I know who you live. This is your final warning. Good morning.
Thanks very much, Patrick. and second last, we have Kit Fried.
Hi. I usually dedicate this poem to either Robert Greeley or J.H. Quinn, but it's actually really for somebody else. I may know who they are. There is a centaur in this clearing. His look of baffled hurt is really just the way his eyes are set too close. But that's not the same as saying he can't be touched. Don't draw attention to his variable roticity. Standard overlay on dialect idiom, or for that matter, the eyes. It comes as a surprise to see the nothing in his fork, the flanks extent behind. He is principled and kind. He would have your shirt, but he would give it back. Poor Therianthrope. Why the long face? He comes from where language comes from, and like him, it is all of half human. Who is she leading him? Accompanied by two adjectives, the least fitting. Blue tattoos on her neck, white lead on her face, wired jaw. Listen, this sentence will fill like a cistern. Grave, oath, clothes, truth. Thank you very much.